Welcome back to The Bible is Art, where we explore the literary artistry of the Bible, and this week, we're talking about the secret at the center of Matthew. Matthew 13 is about secrets. In this chapter, Jesus teaches 8 parables and tells the disciples that they reveal the secrets of the kingdom. And much like Samson, who both tells riddles and is himself a riddle that the reader must solve, so Jesus not only tells secrets, but Matthew has made the chapter itself a secret. You see, Matthew has placed chapter 13 as the chiastically central chapter in the book. As many have noted, Matthew contains 5 teaching blocks of Jesus that conclude with the phrase, "When Jesus finished saying these things." And these 5 teaching blocks are chiastically arranged. Each section has both thematic connections and connections related to their setting. The scenic connections move from mountain to land to sea and back to land and to mountain. Matthew has organized this geographical journey to symbolically communicate Jesus' greatest action, that is, his descent down into the watery death and his ascent into glory of the resurrection. Matthew connects the physical objects of water with death in Jesus' baptism in Matthew 3 and the Gadarene demoniac in Matthew 8, and mountains with glory and exaltation. See the transfiguration in Matthew 17. Matthew melds form and content into one beautiful design. But the secrets go deeper. Not only is Matthew's gospel chiastically structured, so also is the central chapter itself chiastically structured, Matthew 13, as scholars like David Wenham and Thomas Constable have noted. In the central section of this chiasm, that's verses 34 through 43, Jesus quotes from Psalm 78. Here's what Matthew says: "All these things Jesus said to the crowds in parables. Indeed, he said nothing to them without a parable. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet, 'I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter what has been hidden since the foundation of the world.'" What is striking about this is that Psalm 78 seems to be the center of the book of Psalms. In 2007, Beat Weber published an article entitled "Psalm 78 als Mitte des Psalters, ein Versuch." Psalm 78 as the middle of the Psalter, a trial or examination. Weber noted a few lines of evidence that indicated that the final organizer of the Psalter designed it so that Psalm 78 would be the center of the Psalter. Here's how he argues. First, the Psalter is organized into 5 books, with the central book, 3, containing Psalm 78. Second, within book 3, you have the majority of the Asaph Psalms, written by someone named Asaph, Psalms 73 through 83, which places 78 in the center of this subcollection. And third, Weber explains that the Masoretes noted the centers of books, and they marked 78 as the center of the Psalter. Okay, so let's look at Psalm 78 in the narrative progression of the Book of Psalms. Starting with Gerald Wilson's dissertation, The Editing of the Hebrew Psalter, commentators have noticed that the Book of Psalms is not just a haphazard collection of unrelated songs, but was designed with narrative or thematic progression. In broadest strokes, the movement of the Psalter progresses from lament to praise, and the Psalter descends to its blackest in Book 3, where our psalm is. There, we have Psalm 88, the only lament psalm without any sort of resolution at the end, like a confession of trust or confidence. Okay, so now let's look at Psalm 78 and what it actually says and teaches and see how that applies to Matthew. Psalm 78 opens by calling the reader to listen to the psalm because it is a parable and a dark saying or riddle, and that we ought to teach this psalm because it will recollect God's glorious deeds and wonders. The psalm will go on to review the history of Israel's disobedience despite God's great things he has done for them. Psalm 78 and verse 2, the verse that Jesus quotes in Matthew, reads this way: "I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings from of old." Even after we read the psalm, we may justifiably wonder, what is dark about this psalm? The word dark can mean a saying that is enigmatic or like a riddle. Okay, so what then is perplexing or strange? What is the particularly parabolic and pedagogical thing that we are to learn? Well, there are at least two enigmatic ideas that are offered in Psalm 78. First, the enigma of sin. Asaph details the gracious acts of God, the giving of the law, miracles at the Red Sea, the guiding glory cloud, the water from the rock, rain and manna from heaven, and then concomitantly the dazzling, opaque sin of Israel in the presence of such wonders. This is dark because explanations are impotent to untangle the purposeness that gird the disobedient soul in the face of extraordinary divine favor. The second enigma is the persistent favor of God. Why does God not only remain, but continue his blessings on such a sour people? Two times in the psalm, God's perplexing goodness is highlighted, once in the middle and once at the end. In verse 38, after cataloging Israel's viciousness, Asaph says, "Yet he, being compassionate, atoned for their iniquity and did not destroy them. He restrained his anger often and did not stir up all his wrath." And concluding the psalm in 69 through 72, Asaph says, "He built his sanctuary like the high heavens, like the earth which he has founded forever. He chose David his servant and took him from the sheepfolds, from following the nursing ewes. He brought him to shepherd Jacob his people, Israel his inheritance. With upright heart he shepherded them and guided them with his skillful hand." The particularly perplexing aspect of God's goodness is his atonement for a serially sinful people and his selection of David to shepherd the undeserving Israel. We're now able to piece together Jesus and Matthew's purpose for quoting the psalm, given its multi-layered centrality within both Matthew and the Psalter. Matthew quotes the second verse of Psalm 78, "I will open my mouth in parables, I will utter what has been hidden since the foundation of the world." On first reading, you might think that what has been hidden is everything about the kingdom that Jesus discloses in the parables. And while that is certainly true, there must be another layer, and this for two reasons. First, Matthew quotes Psalm 78, implying that what he is doing is connected to that psalm. Jesus could have just explained his purpose for speaking in parables without quoting Psalm 78. Therefore, Psalm 78 will provide an interpretive key to the parables. And second, we've seen that there are multiple layers of centered texts, a phenomenon that requires an explanation. Jesus quotes Psalm 78 in verse 2 for multiple reasons. First, the center of the Psalter and the center of Matthew both contain low points. Book 3 of the Psalms contains the darkest laments, and the center of Matthew is both geographically the low point, we are at the sea, as well as the first time where Jesus communicates that he is concealing his teaching to some. By Jesus quoting this psalm, he is the quintessential psalmist, living through and embodying the whole life of Israel from the depths of lament to the heights of praise. This fits into two other themes in Matthew: Jesus as the new and better Israel, and Jesus as a psalmist. Many commentators have noted the many parallels between Jesus and Israel as Jesus rehearses many of her main actions throughout her history. Regarding Jesus the psalmist, Matthew introduces this in the genealogy in the first chapter, where he changes King Asa's name to Asaph, like the writer of our psalm. Matthew makes this change, along with a change of the king Ammon to Amos, the prophet, to fill out the characterization of the fullness of Jesus as not only king, son of David, and prophet, Amos, but also psalmist, the sweet singer of Israel, embodying her in lament and praise, death and life. Furthermore, the first designation of Jesus' lineage in the book of Matthew is as a son of David. And while we commonly associate that relation with kingship, David is just as well known as the chief psalmist. Second, this quotation may also hint at hope as the Psalter moves to praise. Perhaps the narrative of Matthew will as well. But there's one more secret, the deepest secret of the kingdom. Matthew 13 is about Jesus imparting the secrets of the kingdom. Perhaps Psalm 78's double centrality in Matthew provides us with the deepest secret. Israel is in the same place in Matthew as Israel was in Psalm 78. God came to Israel in Jesus, and he has been doing wonders for 9 chapters, and Israel has largely rejected him. Yet just like the two graces of Psalm 78, God nevertheless chose a new David to shepherd his people, who will atone for their sin. And just like the central depth of lament in Book 3 of the Psalter, and the geographic descent from the glorious mountain to the sea in Matthew, the atonement will occur by the Davidic and Asaphic singer going down into death and rising to the mountain of praise. And that, my friends, is why the Bible is art. Thank you, everyone, for checking this out. This was another article I wrote for the Theopolis blog. If you don't know about it, it's a wonderful blog, and they've got a fantastic podcast. I highly recommend it. So I've linked up the article below if you want a written copy. I know this one was a little bit dense. Let me know if you've got any questions, and I'll see you in the next video. Thanks.